DMTWclothing.com. Don't make this weird. Whatever it is that you do in life, again, do with your heart, chase your passions, and watch it become reality. That's what we're about.
You guys are going to find some cool items, some MMCast items for sale here in the next 3 weeks. They'll be all launched, and next, you know, more conventions, things like that. So,
welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mod.
Music. And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Welcome. Welcome to our normal Tuesday show. I hope you're hearing this on a Tuesday.
It may be a Wednesday.
It should be Tuesday. We have a live cast on Thursday.
Yeah, so everyone, so you know, and we'll talk about it a little bit more thoroughly multiple times in this episode because we're so pumped. We got an official spoiler.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, we're talking about it on Twitch at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday, and then that'll immediately be put onto YouTube on the YouTube channel that we have, which is, if you look, I think it's youtube.com/topdeckingTV because it's the old Top Decking channel. But go do that.
Yeah.
Go subscribe on Twitch. It's a different Twitch channel. We changed it. It's now twitch.tv/TheMMCast.
Yeah, no longer Kessler just trying to just pillage our followers.
I got like 50 Twitch followers. And no big deal. it's not a big deal. So today's episode, we have actually Matt Sperling calling in. He had a busy schedule, so he's actually going to be here for a 30-minute chunk. You know, we had a call in, and then we'll follow that up with a little bit more content. We're going to end it up with a non-magic conversation about Game of Thrones.
Entirely full of spoilers, but with a spoiler alert in case you guys want to jump off. So that's just the very end of the show.
And we're going to be talking about Eldritch Moon. Eldritch. I've been told that I say it wrong as Eldric.
Yeah, it's okay.
But Eldritch sounds so much better than...
Yeah,
if you ask me,
Eldritch. But it's sweet. There's a bunch of cool mechanics. That's what we're talking about. With Sperling are all of those fun mechanics. So
before we get on there, I want to thank DMTW, the clothing guys, for helping sponsor this. They're helping us come up with a bunch of cool merch. You heard their kind of advert at the very beginning. Check out the Command Zone, our sister podcast. They do awesome Commander content.
Yeah. Yep. At the Command Cast.
I'm interested to hear Jimmy and Josh's thoughts on the werewolf. We talked a little bit about this episode.
I think Josh is pretty disappointed in us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at the MMCast.
At Ben Bateman Media.
I'm at Kess Wiley. Those are pretty much, you can search all three of those things for Twitter, Instagram, and not Facebook. Facebook.
Yeah.
But you can find us on Facebook. Make sure to check out Facebook. We're going to be posting stuff, content, a little bit more there. We have a new intern who will be helping us. Say hi, new intern.
Hi.
Her name is Desiree. She'll be helping. And then we're also posting on YouTube. So that's something we're going to try doing once a week now, posting the episode and doing more YouTube content. But go to youtube.com because we're going to be releasing stuff there.
Yeah, Top Decking TV. It's all there. Like, you can find, I think, the last four episodes or three episodes or two episodes or something.
All right. So first we're going to talk about each of the new Eldritch Moon or Eldritch.
Is it Eldritch or Eldritch?
I think it's Eldritch Moon spoiler cards. The new rules. So there's Meld, Escalate, and one other one.
I think Meld, Emerge, and
Emerge. Escalate. He's right. So there's Emerge, which is, it has like a, it's like blue 5, and then you can sack a creature, and then it reduces the cost equal to that to make it lower.
So let me see here. Looking up. So let's start with Meld, with like the
obvious one.
The Voltron weird mechanic.
So for those who don't know, Meld is basically, if you have two creatures that have Meld and name each other on the cards, they then flip into a double-sided flip card that's big and beefy, and there's only going to be three of them. There's the Rat Scavenger one, which flips into a Skidding Hoarder that gives everything +1/+0 and menace. There's the Bruna Gisela one that becomes Brazilla, which is a big angel Eldrazi. And then there's a, what's the third one? Oh, the land and the garrison, which is a land and a garrison. It becomes a 7/4 hasty trample, makes 3/2 tokens when it's attacking, thing that comes off of a land that gives things haste.
Yeah, my feeling on these Meld cards, so it's confirmed there's only going to be three, that's a thing, right?
Those are the three pairs only.
My feeling on these is just like, it feels clunky to me. I mean, I know in the past, like, we've had the whole, if you control these three names or these two cards, you search your library for this thing, that's kind of a thing Magic's done in the past, but it feels just like, I mean, I do like that one brings the other back. I think those are cool mechanics, and that's helpful. But even so, I just look at it, it makes me just feel kind of like, ugh, this doesn't look competitive or fun and modern to me. What do you think, Sperling?
Yeah, I agree. I think that even they acknowledge by providing such a small dosage, they're acknowledging that this might be fun for some people some of the time, but the limited print run here is really an indicator, I think, that they understand this is not going to be fun for most people most of the time. It is hard to assemble. A lot of players are going to encounter these cards in limited environments where you don't even have the other named card, which always is kind of a feel bad, right? You open up two wheels on a car and it doesn't do anything, right? So you can kind of see that you're missing the other two wheels. And the other thing is that in terms of gameplay, I think there are some feel bads. Oh my gosh, it finally came together and then it can get bounced or removed and the whole creature's gone. That means that you've got to have a huge payoff because of these natural big drawbacks. Those types of mechanics tend to not be that fun, at least to me, where you have to make the reward so big to overcome inherent flaws that, okay, the game ended, I got my combo, one of the players is probably not leaving that game feeling too great, and all the other games that doesn't come together, you've got the player turn, some doesn't feel great. So, you know, it's big, it's splashy, it's not like it. I don't think it's a horrible mechanic, but I'm feeling some of the same kind of reluctance that you guys expressed, just with the fact that, you know, just on the fundamental level, the mechanic has some issues.
Well, so I'll be the one that kind of likes the mechanic, but I do think one of the issues I have with it is because they kind of were being too tentative with it, because they're only printing three versions of it, it definitely makes it feel a little bit of a letdown, because it's like you're doing this big, cool thing that you're going to... It's kind of the face of the set, but then you're not really committing to it enough for me to really enjoy it. I mean, they made one that is meant to kind of be like, this is the one that'll happen in Limited. They made one that's pretty much the standard playable one, which is the land and the Hanawar, whatever, where it's like the land is a pretty big free roll because a land that gives creatures haste that comes into play untapped is a pretty playable card. And then a 2/3 for three that makes tokens every time it attacks, and like a mini, what's the white 3/4 that makes tokens? The mythic rare?
White 3/4 mythic rare.
Mirrored and Besieged.
Oh, Hero Bladehold?
Yeah, like it's like a mini Hero Bladehold. Like these are playable cards that you maybe consider playing anyways, and like sometimes you'll just randomly get the 7/4 that makes 3/2s that's like really good on kind of a little bit more of a free roll. And then the last one's like a commander state, like. The like Bruna or Jazilla is like definitively standard playable, and then Bruna might see a one of play just to maybe get the combo, but in reality it's like a commander combo that like feels weird because Bruna's or Jazilla's abilities are like very standard pushed.
Yeah, I mean Jazilla's like just generally good. It is funny whenever for our purposes in modern, the difference between a 4/3 and a 3/4 is so pronounced that like it's just like a four mana 4/3 that has like a bunch of sweet abilities is like, it's just kind of lame. And like if it was like a 4 mana 3/4 with the exact same abilities, we'd be like, this card is actually totally sick. Like,
yeah, I know. It's completely dying to lightning bolt.
Yeah. I think, yeah, if you look at that casting cost with that creature type, legendary angel, you think about Linvala, something that's had a major impact in modern over the years, and you're absolutely right. 3/4, it's just a different number than 4/3 in modern.
That is bizarre. That's like so. That's so specific. I wonder if there's any more. I wonder if there's any more like ubiquitous effect than the cause and effect of Lightning Bolt on the way we assess cards and any other part of Magic. Like, I wonder.
A 3/4/4 in Modern is this weird, specific, unique thing where the only removal spell really played consistently in the format that can kill it is Path to Exile, because it dodges Abrupt Decay and Lightning Bolt.
Right.
Dodging both of those is such a big deal. That's why, like, Birthing Pod was one of, like, if Birthing Pod was a 3-drop, I don't think it would have been nearly as ubiquitous in the format.
Yeah, true.
Because it was a 3-drop, it just, you know, it dodged Abrupt Decay, so like there's no way to get rid of it.
Now you mentioned
I think to find another card that's had an influence like Lightning Bolt has had on Modern, you probably would want to go to maybe like Wasteland and Legacy, where everyone's mana base has to anticipate and appreciate the impact of Wasteland. And so even when your opponent doesn't show up with Wasteland, just like in Modern, even when they don't show up with Lightning Bolt, you still have your deck has changed to already account for the fact that they might have Lightning Bolt or Wasteland. So yeah, those types of cards where it becomes so ubiquitous, format defining. People automatically think about it. And then certain cards that are just, you know, certain ways of building a mana base or certain creatures with three or less toughness, the value definitely changes.
Yeah, I would agree with you completely there. I mean, I think that is because, and I will always say this, like this is like we talk about Magic as on a competitive level and on a tournament level and trying to understand it like at this level where we kind of know the names of cards and we really know the decks pretty well. But you do think about those people that get into a format or they get into the game and they're kind of newer to it and they maybe don't understand or realize what we're talking about. That moment of realization when they go to an FNM or they go to a tournament and they play 9 rounds and they run up against 6 decks that are playing Lightning Bolt and they haven't taken this into account and the day just crumbles out from under them. I mean, that's the reason those effects exist. That cause and effect exists is because, like, yeah, the odds are you're going to go up against Wasteland and Legacy or Lightning Bolt in Modern constantly. I mean, no matter what the metagame's like, no matter how it changes, that's just always going to be a thing.
Yeah, there's actually some interesting resources nowadays online that weren't available when I was learning competitive play. Resources, websites that are aggregating results from tournaments, and they're looking at, give me a percentage of decks that play this card, give me a percentage of decks that play that card, and what are the top 20 cards played in this format? And if you're just learning a format, finding one of those lists can be really helpful, right? Because it's almost like where do I start if I just want to learn what's going on? Where do I start? Right. I can play a couple of matches, but then I get exposed to a couple of decks, one or two. I think looking at that list and seeing, okay, wow, this Lightning Bolt card is in all these different decks, right? And then, wow, this Thought-Not Seer card is higher than I might expect it. Why is that? And then you start to see some of the linear cards, and you know, I think you can get a pretty actually good 10,000-foot view of the format while at the same time you're looking at the ubiquitous staple utility cards that are going to need to warp the kind of cards you play, Lightning Bolt, like we mentioned. You know, in a format where you see standard formats where Mana Leak, this works in standard too. You know, Mana Leak was a really popular card.
Yeah.
But, you know, that might change the way you build your standard deck. So that's kind of an interesting modern in the sense of recent, not the format. It's an interesting entry point that's now available to players given the technology that exists now.
Yeah, you do sort of wonder, what does Modern look like in the day they ban Lightning Bolt? I don't think they'll do it, but like that would be a huge... That would
giant
be like
shift.
And it also like would not be one that would upset that many people, probably, because you don't lose that much money by like getting Lightning Bolt banned out of your deck. I mean, you just don't.
No.
So
I
mean,
no, I guess...
Yeah, it makes Burn...
becomes way better than Jund.
It makes Burn worse. Like, it just... I mean, yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah. Anyway, let's continue talking about some of the other mechanics. So let's cover this weird charm mechanic.
Escalate.
Yeah. So
it's entwine meets multi kicker meets commands, basically all in one smush package.
Yeah. So here's my thing, right?
That's right.
So basically, the card, the one that illustrates it the best that's been spoiled, I think, is this card, Blessed Alliance. It's an instant for 1W, 1W. Escalate 2W, and when escalate says, pay this cost for each mode chosen beyond the first. Choose one or more. Target player gains 4 life. Untap up to 2 target creatures, or target opponent sacrifices an attacking creature. So essentially, for 2 mana, you get one of those abilities. For 4, you get 2 of them. For 6, you get all of them. There's also a black common that has 2 abilities.
Well, there'll probably be a chunk of these. We're still on day 2. Spoilers. So this is more like the idea behind the mechanic. I mean, Entwine was always pretty powerful. Like, there is definitely some very powerful Entwine cards from past histories. Multi-kick, or kicker in general, is one of the most, you know, is a fan favorite mechanic.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, the Escalate 2 on the one, the black instant that's been spoiled so far, Borrowed Malevolence.
Yep.
This card has 2 modes. I think that's completely the same now as Entwine would have been, right? Like, Entwine 2 on that card, I think, does the same thing, to choose one or both. So that's interesting. So you can already kind of see you can see how close all these different kicker variants, like you said. I mean, they're just so close. I like them. I mean, I think pro players tend to like these cards quite a bit. There's just so much optionality built into them. And so you got to know when to spend it early, when to save it up for late. You know what I mean? There's always there's a floor, there's a minimum value and a maximum value. And you have to decide as a player in the middle of the game, am I going to try to get a maximum type of value or a minimum type of value out of this card? And how do I use my mana efficiently? These are the things that good players tend to be good at.
Well, I can't wait for a later set when we get the multicolor versions of these that are each of the two color combinations that have the escalate costs built in. So they're like one part charm, one part command. Like, it's just this, like my favorite kinds of cards, legitimately. Like, I just like love cards like this so much.
Options.
Yeah, I love options.
You go in buffets and choosing all the little bit of that lobster, little bit of that steak.
If it costs four or less and I get two things out of it and I can play it at instant speed, I'm always happy. So anyway, yeah, I think that's cool. We haven't like seen, you know, anything, any bomby card yet that's been spoiled with that ability, but it seems interesting. I don't think
we'll get maybe they'll print a bomby one, but it won't be a playable one. We'll get a inexpensive, efficient card that does a bunch of little things that all makes it maybe slightly playable. I mean, like, I don't think there's ever been a charm cycle or command cycle that's been printed that doesn't see modern play.
You're basically saying that we're going to get the equivalent of Warping Whale, but like this card.
Yeah, like even Warping Whale. So like in the history of this game, I mean, even some of the, like maybe the worst ones were the Khans of Tarkir command or charms, and even those see play.
Yeah, I mean, look, optionality is just like you just said, Matt. I mean, that's what people like, and it's
monocolor one drop command or charms, even everything.
Piracy Charm, sweet. I like Piracy Charm. I've always been a fan of that card.
All right, so. That's kind of that. The next one is the Emerge one, which is the one we kind of forgot at the very beginning.
Well, so this is like interesting. So the card Wretched Griff is the card I'm looking at here.
It's the only
right?
one I think printed so or spoiled so far at the time of this.
And so this is interesting, right? Wretched Griff is seven colorless for an Eldrazi Hippogriff, 3/4 flying. When you cast Wretched Griff, draw a card. But the ability Emerge. This is a little complicated wording on it. Emerge blue and 5. You may cast the spell by sacrificing a creature and paying the emerge cost reduced by that creature's converted mana cost. So if I'm reading this correctly, this thing costs 7. If I sacrifice a 3 drop and cast this, I can cast it for 3?
For 4.
I think it's 6 minus the cost of the creature,
yeah. Sorry,
right?
You're correct. Yeah, its emerge cost is 6. If you sac a 3 drop, you can now pay it for 3.
So, I mean, it's fine. It obviously brings to mind...
3 mana for a 3/4 flying that cantrips when it enters the battlefield is kind of a nuts card.
But you've already invested 3. So obviously, like, obviously, you know, you're having to play something that you got value out of the first time when you played it. Otherwise, it's, like, not good.
The amount of times I've, like, can just have a throwaway creature that gained me value ahead of time that is kind of, like, imagine this, and this card maybe not isn't the answer, but anything with Kitchen Finks.
Yeah, right. Finks is totally, that's like, totally the thing.
And then, like, something to always pay attention and look at in any time you see new cards is there a cost reduction mechanic? It's probably better than you think it is.
Always, yeah. Always, always.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would add, I think in Limited, the way that you naturally think about the first, you know, what do I have lying around? I'm going to sacrifice it maybe if it makes sense. I think that's kind of, you know, in Limited, that's what's going to come up. For Constructed, when I see sacrifice a creature, I'm already thinking about what can I pair this with to kind of get value out of that. Sacrificing a creature is oftentimes beneficial. There are creatures that trigger when they die. There are other things that say when something dies, such and such happens. There are reasons to want cards in your graveyard. But also, I think with this, I mean, it's new and it's cool. And let's say they put one of these with Flash, right? All of a sudden, in something like in Modern, I could like evoke a Shriek Maw. Then with Flash, I could sacrifice that. Now, again, Wretched Grip doesn't work that way because it doesn't have Flash. But you're thinking about, okay, this is kind of a combo-enabling type of mechanic where you're right, it reduces the cost. It's an alternative cost that way. And there's also some cool sacrifice stuff. And it keys off converted mana cost of one of your permanents in play, something that you typically don't care too much about. So these are all indicators. This is kind of a build-around combo thing, and we're not going to know what this is capable of until we've seen some of the other cards and what they do and how much they cost.
Right, and there's a bunch of different ways to kind of cheat in things that have a high converted mana cost for less expense. Like, Evoke is an example, but even no Morph cards really see play in Modern, but Morph is another example where you can get a high converted mana cost for cheaper into play. So, like, there's definitely different ways to play around this. It depends on the card printed. If we get a bunch of cards like this, we might not have the correct answer. But, you know, as you said, a Flash card with Emerge on it, it sounds nothing. Pretty much no matter what it does to a certain extent.
What about Spire Golem or other affinity cards?
Yeah, affinity cards sound nothing with this.
You just, like, you get them in play on, like what's Spire Golem is affinity for islands, and it costs 7, right? It's a 2/2 flyer, is that what it is?
It costs 6.
Costs 6 and it's a 2/2 flyer? So
it's
you
on
can,
6 and it has affinity for islands, the Spire Golem.
So you can play it for 3 on turn 3, that's the deal? Is that right?
Yeah, it's a 2/4 for 3.
It's, yeah, And that's the way to approach deck building with these in constructed. In limited, of course, you know, what you have is what you have. In constructed, it's like, okay, what has a really big casting cost? What wants to be sacrificed? You know, sacrificing a Spire Golem doesn't sound that great unless one of these emerge cards is some monstrous thing, and, you know, unless you really want to take six off of it for some reason. You know, it's hard to get value that way.
Right.
On the other hand, I mean, there's modern and other older formats. There's so many cards in them that don't be surprised when a new mechanic like this comes out. If, yeah, there's some morph creature that has a big cast out that no one would think. You know, this is an opportunity to kind of look back through the binder and see, check out some cards you haven't been thinking about at all.
Solemn Simulacrum seems like real fun. that seems sweet. There's just so much value.
Well, I mean, and even in limited, though, like, the amount of times you play limited and there's just a board stall, and you're like, well, I have this 3-drop that was like a 2/2 that is doing nothing now, so I might as well just, like, you know, gain some value out of it, and now you have a 3/4 flyer. Like, that's infinitely better than any kind of 2-drop.
I mean, let's be honest, just specifically about Wretched Griff, we just talked about the value of a 3/4 in Modern. This is a 3/4 flyer that draws a card when you cast it that has a cost-reduce effect in a format that is notorious for breaking cost-reducing effects. Like, I'm not ruling this card out necessarily. I'm not saying that
oh,
it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, and this is more on the brew-heavy existence of the world, but there's definitely decks that, like, I play around with where it's having just a card that has a high converted mana cost for whatever reason, like a Cascade deck, but that you can play for a lot cheaper. Is there's definitely benefits to that, and there's a lot of cards that, you know, do damage equal to converted mana cost that, like, you don't want to play an Emrakul normally because then it's just a discarded card out of your hand for all intents and purposes. But
right.
This, you can cast it and you have a 7-drop. There's a lot of different ways to kind of play with it.
So let's cover quickly, just those are the mechanics. Let's talk about Emrakul. I mean, that's the thing. That's the
one everyone's talking about.
I mean, there's spoilers, and there's lots of cards to talk about that have been spoiled. But Emrakul is specifically her own thing. That
she does technically have a new spin on Delirium. She's got Tarmo Affinity, is I think what someone called it.
Tarmo Affinity?
Because she has Affinity where she becomes cheaper for how many permanents are in your graveyard.
Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, I think we can all agree. Well, I know you think this, Kessler, because you've been ranting about it. But
oh, yeah, I think this is 100% the second best Eldrazi ever printed.
What do you think, Sprung?
Well, in terms of power level, yeah, it's interesting. I think there is a trap to be aware of, thinking about how big Tarmogoyf is on average. But Tarmogoyf counts both graveyards, and so I think that shortcut is not going to always serve you well, given that it's only your graveyard. However, you know, it's not hard to get a bunch of types in your graveyard in Modern. You can play Thought Scours, you can sacrifice Baubles. We've seen decks, Sam Black played a deck with the Delirium 1 green, the name is escaping me.
Traverse the Ulvenwald. Traverse the Ulvenwald.
The tutor.
Traverse the Ulvenwald. He was using that as kind of part of his mana base, but of course, the Chaxian Probe and Bauble, Mistress Bauble, you can put types in there extremely quickly in Modern. Now, Emrakul, it's not like these decks that are built around 0/1 mana cards are going to want to get a top end like this, even if you get it down to 7 mana, that's still 7 mana is not playable in those decks. So how are you going to actually use this card? That's going to be the challenge, I think.
Well, I think the two types of decks that I look at for this card are Tron is the obvious one, because I think it's not very hard for Tron to get this down to 10 mana, which is now in the realm of stuff that they cast.
Yeah.
And in that situation, you know, Modern Nexus did an article recently on, they ran this through someone's gauntlet, and I forget who exactly it was, but basically, you know, they were more intentionally pointing at how many permanents and how much card advantage do I get off of casting this versus if I had an Ulamog. Because Ulamog is a guaranteed 2 cards versus Emrakul, which, you know, can be a variable because you can get maybe 1 card to, you know, a bunch because of the Mindslaver effect. And they found on average she hit around 3 to 5 more than 1 to 2. Just from the fact that, and from that perspective, in Tron, that's just worth it. Because, and you know, there are some times where they have Eviscerate, you know, you're playing against Pod and you can just get out of Viscerasir and completely wipe their board, which are the insane plays, or you're playing against anyone that has a life-paying activation on one of their cards and you can just kill them. So that's one of the options. The other one are, you know, the Grixis or Jund decks, where These are decks that, A, you already kind of want to fill your graveyard. Yes, you want to get your opponent's graveyard filled also because of Tarmogoyf. But they can play Thoughtscour. But also, you know, as a one of, as your end game, like, this is your kill spell that you're kind of building towards. This does have a lot of versatility in that way. And you can kind of set yourself up to a position that makes it so your opponent isn't going to be able to deal with this. So you swing for 13 trample damage the next turn pretty easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think okay. what you said about Tron, the Tron part made a lot more sense to me than I think the Jun, the Grixis part. The Grixis deck, I don't know, I could be wrong. I just think that it ends up being still a little bit on the expensive side. I mean, in a modern control deck, you expect the game to be over, and of course the game is going to be over a good amount of time, so that's why I'm not. I'm definitely allowing for the possibility that I'm wrong here. But even ending the game, when it starts to cost 6, 7, 8 mana, there are just a lot of decks that would just rather go another way. You know, Gurmag Angler doesn't have too much trouble finishing the game.
Sure.
If you have control of the game, you've got a healthy graveyard. You know, so the question, you know what I mean? Sometimes in a control deck, there's a danger. You don't want to give yourself too much help finishing the game, because then you have a card that can only finish the game. And that's what Emrakul really represents, right? Whereas Gurmag Angler is a card that can play defense, can, you know, when you're having a mid-game slugfest, and I mean, maybe Emrakul wins that game by going over the top 2 turns later, that's possible, but I'm just more inclined in general to use it in a Tron deck like you mentioned. That does sound pretty attractive to me, though.
Right, yeah, and I think Tron is the lock, and when you talk about Eldrazi, like, saying it's the second best Eldrazi is not exactly, like, Tron has played 3 of them ever. So it's not a hard contest to win necessarily when it comes to Constructed Magic. But I mean, Emrakul 1 is obviously the best. And part of that is because by cheating it in a play, you get a lot of advantage, which you don't really get with this Emrakul. But being able to cast this for 10 mana is a completely feasible thing that Tron can do. And it does a lot of stuff that you want to be doing in general once you cast it.
Yeah, no question.
And I mean, let's be totally fair as far as, you know, you were saying, Sperling, that something's still costing 7 mana or 8 mana or 6 mana for that matter. What's the cheapest you can get down is 5, right? That's possible.
If you're playing tribal.
In modern, that, you know, things that cost 6 and 7 traditionally aren't actually playable or good unless you are dealing with a big mana deck. But, like, that's just historically. You're talking about what you're getting for 6 or 7 mana is, like, an absurd, totally ridiculous, probably does end the game effect. And I know you're saying that if you want to end the game, if you're controlling the board with an Angler, that's one thing. I don't necessarily know you have to be controlling the board to cast this for 6 and, like, essentially win the game.
And part of that is because...
That's a good point. I guess we should talk about it also. I mean, I mentioned Sam Black's deck that had Traverse. I mean, Traverse also is a tutor that could find it, and he did play, like, a mix of Seal of Fire and Tar Fire to do both enchantment work and tribal work. So that's pretty interesting to me. I think at that point you're only using one deck slot because you've got these traverses. All the work you're doing is going towards turning on both Traverse and Emrakul. I mean, maybe there is something there.
Right.
I mean, and also, like, yeah, if you like you said with Traverse, I mean, if you're You can play some number of, like, one of sort of haymakers that cost between, like, 4 and 6 mana that are going to just completely swing the game. There's enough powerful things you could be casting and searching for with Traverse that only are going to take maybe 3 or 4 deck slots total. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty cool idea. I've seen Sam build a couple different versions of those Delirium decks. There was a Tireless Tracker one, I feel like, that he built with that was pretty cool. I've seen him mess around with a bunch of different decks like that, and they all seem pretty fun, pretty interesting. I mean, I also know, still on the subject of like low casting costs and Delirium things, there was that really cool deck from a while back, that Prowess deck that Chapin built, playing Mishra's Baubles, that, you know, you start to kind of get into that same flavor where you have a lot of card types.
The one other thing I do want to point out is the reason the 5+ kind of ban on cards in Modern exists is because so many decks, if you tap out for a 6 drop, will just kill you on the next turn.
Yeah.
Like, because Infect exists and Burning exists. But the one thing that Emrakul helps protect against that is they don't get to do that on their next turn versus other 6 drops. Like, you know, against Infect, I cast Emrakul, and then on their turn, I use all of their pump spells on a creature and then just don't swing with it. And now they're you know, they basically discarded their whole hand, and I have a 13-13 staring them in the face.
You're right.
Against Burn, I can point their burn spells at their own face against, you know, these decks that punish you like that. Affinity is one where then you have a Ravager just like, oh, I cast Ravager and sack every my entire board. And
yeah, and I think that comparing it with, so people I've been mind flavored in Modern. This is not a completely new effect. I think that giving them the extra turn is certainly worth it to get the 13/13 flying trample protects itself body. I think having that on the board when they're taking their turns is also really helpful. You can clear out their biggest creature by just forcing it, you know, choosing to attack with it, blocking. It's not going to save you versus a go-wide strategy or versus, you know, three Charmer Blades, but that's okay. Mind Flayer didn't do that either. And I think that a lot of times, I think I'm excited about that part of it, that I get to use the first turn to just attack their base creature into it, and then they have one turn. They can't use instants. Presumably have cleared out whatever, you know, if they happen to have non-instant stuff. I mean, I suppose if they have something like Supreme Verdict, you know, I may not have had anything to do with it. But it's just interesting to me that body provides, it's a different way to play Mindslaver, and it's going to feel a little bit different.
Right, and you know, the protection from instants for sorceries clause does really almost say protection from instants and sorceries other than top deck sorceries and board wipes. Because everything else
It's only instants. It's just so you know, it's only instants that it has protection from.
No, I was making more of a, not a joke, but like inferring that, you know, because you take control of their turn, you get to cast all targeted removal sorcery spells they may have in their hand. So it's only
top-decked
sorceries or board wipes where, like, you can't cast a board wipe, but, you know, because then it'll kill your Emrakul.
That's exactly right. Because the end of their turn, there's, you know, oh, well, what if they just use their removal end of the turn? Well, that's probably why it has protection from instance in particular. Because unless they have something, not many people are going to show up with Stasis Snare in Modern. Of course, in standard, Stasis Snare could become more popular if this card becomes more popular. There's something to think about.
All right, so as we mentioned before, you know, Matt Sperling was only here for those 30 minutes, so that was kind of the end of him being on the cast and us talking about the cards that we were going to be going over. This set's sweet. That's kind of where I'm at.
It's definitely interesting.
There's weird swinginess. Like, I do think, like, the Werewolf being kind of a lame Commander card and Constructing card, the legendary one, like, it's obviously for Commander. They made this card for Commander,
As far as specific card evaluations, we will do a spoiler, the full set review episode, so
well,
we probably don't.
Top 10. We're not going to talk about that Werewolf. It's not a top 10 card in Modern.
No. And that card
And this is more like a feel for the set walking into it. I am a little disappointed. I do think
that card may be the single most disappointing card in the whole set for me. Like, rarely do I tweet negatively about any card in Magic. Like, I usually try to, like, not say anything negative because, like, we love this game. We support Wizards, and we overall think they put out a pretty phenomenal product. So, like, who are we to really, like, be those people? But, I mean, this was a situation where I actually saw this, and I was like, this is, like, everything I didn't want out of this card. This is, like, and I realize it's a Commander staple, and that's why it's missing the
boat. It's
not
a Commander staple. That's I guess, my problem with it as a Commander player, among other things, or a person who plays Commander on occasion, is... As a general, this ability isn't that interesting. It pumps a creature +4 in a format that attacking is a bad idea, and then it flips and fights things. The one cool thing is it does flip into fights, so you can, like, if someone doesn't play a spell on their turn, which doesn't happen very often, it can start flipping every other turn. But
I mean, I said staple, and obviously that was generous. What I really meant was a Commander option, which is not a Modern option. The thing is this: like, I don't understand why we couldn't have just had a super, super sweet legendary 2-drop or even three.
They printed this for Commander. That's why, I guess, my point is like, we weren't getting the legendary. Who cares if it's legendary and a Werewolf? We might get a cool Lord for Werewolves in Modern. That might still happen. But who cares if it's legendary? The point is that the legendary rider is so much more important for Commander than any other format, period. And not only did they print a card that isn't really constructed pushed, like, it's not good for Modern, it's not good for Standard, maybe. I have theories it might be okay in Standard, but that's a different conversation.
Right.
But this card isn't good in Commander. So who is this? This is kind of for the Timmies. It's just like, I like big creatures, I guess. But even then...
This card's weird to me because, like, okay, Huntmaster of the Fells is pretty clearly better. Like,
yeah.
Huntmaster of the Fells is a 4-drop. That's just, like, a pretty clearly better card. And then also...
Better in Command. Like, I would much rather Huntmaster of the Fells be my legendary creature Commander than this.
Like, and you're talking about where Huntmaster was previously printed, and then you printed Arlan Cord also in the previous set, which is, like, again, it's not a werewolf, or it's a werewolf planeswalker, but like
it's not a creature.
Arlan Cord's better. Like you can't. Why? I don't understand how you
Which
can
makes
make
sense. Like planeswalkers can be really good. And even in constructed, I think a planeswalker is better than a legend. But with this card,
I just think about it as casting cost. You're talking about. I'm thinking, and maybe my brain is just super myopic in a sense. But
you really wanted that 2-drop legendary werewolf. I mean, I called it in the last episode that most likely it's going to be a 5-drop. That's not surprising to me. What's surprising to me is who is this for? It's not really for. Its abilities aren't good.
It's
in
for
Commander.
The sake of. Like, I think it's just for the sake of flavor in the set. That's what it's
for. Yeah.
It's just for the sake of flavor. And sometimes, look. Sometimes that happens. It's the thing is, it's very, very rare.
But even if its plus was double strike, if its ETB was double strike and then it fought on the other side, that's a more useful.
Okay, they occasionally print cards for the purpose of flavor or for the purpose of story, and like that's why they're printed, and it's clear that's why they're printed. Sometimes they're rares. A lot of the times they're commons.
That not having a legendary werewolf for Commander was the biggest. Like
complaint.
Negative complaint of Innistrad. Original Innistrad block,
and so people wanted it. I guess it's just weird that they would choose to make it a mythic, but in any case, that's enough
from the werewolf. You know, we talked about Emrakul. We talked about all the different mechanics.
Yep.
I'm glad Manus is returning. I'm excited to see because of the new rotation model. I feel like second sets are where they're going to maybe put more push cards. So I think we'll have a likely chance of getting a more pushed version of a Madness blue card. Because they don't want to put it in the first set because you don't want 6 months where Jace plus a Madness card are dominating.
Yeah.
But now we only have 3 months, so maybe we can get a little bit of a Hail Mary, especially because Standard right now is like dominated by green-white decks, apparently.
What's the sickest Madness counterspell that we could possibly get? Like, what's the most pushed version of a Madness counterspell we could get?
Counter-target spell for 2 mana.
Just
as like Madness cost, and it's like a four,
and it's a four-drop.
Four-drop normally counterspell.
Would they print that?
No.
No. With Jace, just like so not fun.
We might get the last counter. I think because normally when they do stuff like that, the Madness cost goes up.
Yeah, I think they would. I think they would print that. I think they would print that because you're talking about best case scenario.
I think
we're
more likely to get like counter-target creature spell or like mana leak Madness.
Yeah, but like again, like you're talking, you still have to have your discard outlet. I guess, what's the most just like consistent like sits in play, doesn't have to tap, zombie infestation cards like that, right? That's what you're looking for if you have a Madness card like that. Is something obviously Jace is the best thing. You want Jace or you want some sort of other looter or some effect where you're discarding a card, maybe a reverse looter. But like those are still creatures; they can still just get bolted. What are the things in Modern that allow you to discard multiple cards with no activation cost that aren't creatures? So, Zombie Infestation is one.
The green-black Lotlith Troll.
Lotlith Troll has to be a creature, so that doesn't work.
I've actually done this. Wait, I know all
this. Yeah, because you and I...
There's actually not a lot.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting. It's not like Legacy where you have the one black... Or you have the wolf, the green wolf, or the Putrid Imp, or the white Tylus Tracker... all those are cards that can discard for free.
Yeah.
And they're like all the one drop ones are played in Dredge regularly.
Yeah.
In Modern, you run into a little bit more of a problem where like they're normally a limited amount, but there's some like the red one red Faithless Looting is kind of one of the better ones.
It's a sorcery though.
Sorcery, so
for the purpose of a Madness counterspell. I was just trying to think.
I think the best one is the Vampire. One of the best. Like I was actually testing. I'll release the list online at some point.
Yeah.
But not the one. Well, that's the one that's seeing play in Dredge decks right now. The Menace one red drop that you can discard a card and sack and draw a card. But that's only a one drop, one card at a time. I think it costs one mana, but the make Vampire tokens enchantment. Is being underappreciated.
One mana makes Vampire Tokens enchantment.
It's a black and a colorless enchantment for one mana, colorless mana. You can discard a card and it produces a life-linking Vampire Knight. It's like one of the best cards in Shadow over Innistrad Limited.
Okay.
It's really good.
it's an enchantment, you're saying?
It's an enchantment. Okay, it's Vampire Tokens. I'm using it currently in a Madness Vampire Modern deck.
I'm just having a mental block. I think I know the card you're talking about. Are you talking about...
That I can tweet out or share?
You're talking about Call of Bloodline.
Yes.
Yeah.
The card's amazing.
But it costs one mana to do it.
Yes, it's not good for this counterspell card.
I mean, it would just make it cancel. Yeah. But you get a creature out of it.
Yeah.
Eh, it's not the worst.
Castle. Yeah. I don't know.
Activate this ability only once
but
each
let's,
turn.
Let's move on from counterspell. From this card that doesn't exist.
Right.
I do, you know, think that this is a set that is going to push a lot of weight. The mechanics we talked about, all of them are very spiky. Even Delirium is a spiky mechanic.
Yeah.
Like, other than Merge, all of the other ones are spiky, and Merge only has three cards that we really have to worry about, or six cards, technically. So, like, when it really comes down to it, this is, I think, how do you feel about all the Eldrazi stuff? I know you don't care about story at all, so I guess that's not really a thing you know anything about.
I mean, I've been watching the Access Magic Jimmy's things, Eldritch Moon things.
Well, like, did you kind of pay attention at all to the fact that Emrakul was being hinted at throughout the year?
Yeah. Well, how could I have not paid attention to it? My co-host on this podcast once a week does nothing but talk about it. It was when you started pointing it out, it made sense, the tentacles and everything like that. Yeah. And the most recent episode of Access Magic, they were talking about all the cool, like, the weird, like, alien, like, you know, blooming of people's faces, and it's all beautiful but horrible and terrible at the same time. I think that's all cool. I think Emrakul, and I think just like the Eldrazi is.
You're a movie, but what's your view on like The Thing, the movie?
I've never been like a The Thing fan.
Oh, really?
I've seen The Thing. I just was never you know, the movie that jumped out at me. I like the sort of the War of the Worlds, giant monsters, Call of Cthulhu kind of thing. So Eldrazi has always appealed to me. Eldrazi also holds a special place in my heart just because when I came back to Magic, I mean, I say that like I left for a long time, but like I took probably like a year or two off around like 2008, 2009, right around there.
Skipped Lorwyn and Shards of Alara Block.
No, I played Lorwyn. I took Alara Block off, I think, is the only thing I missed, actually. Because Alara was followed by
Zendikar.
Yeah. And so basically, I came back at Rise because I moved to L.A. That was the deal. I moved to L.A. Oh, okay. So I met you at a Rise draft, I'm pretty sure.
That's likely.
And I remember, like, who was the green, uncommon, like, level-up Beastmaster guy, Beastbreaker of Balaghed.
I have no idea what he's called, but I know what you're
Beastbreaker
talking
about. Beastbreaker of Balaghed? Is that his name? I drafted like a whole.
Those are Zendikar sounding names of stuff.
I drafted a lot of Rise. That was like a sweet draft environment. And like I remember getting Emrakul at the pre-release as the pre-release card. That's so sweet that they gave out a foil Emrakul as the pre-release card. Like in retrospect, I remember getting that card and like I liked the vibe of it. I thought the vibe was very cool. So it's nice to see Emrakul and the Eldrazi come back like this. Over multiple sets. I'm definitely a fan. And I'm learning to appreciate the story, the Magic story more, the more we've talked about it. And like that Flavor episode was a lot of fun. I think that pretty much wraps us up though.
For the thing, I want to take a, this is kind of a little shorter of an episode, and there's two things. First off, we have a spoiler card on Thursday morning, 9:30 a.m. We actually, so for those who have followed us on Twitch before, please follow our new Twitch. I made it. I finally gave in to Ben's.
Did you really?
Yeah, we have the MMCast Twitch stream. It's twitch.tv/themmcast.
Unified front, guys. I'm just pretending. I totally knew that.
Wait, really?
No.
Wait, did you know or did you not know?
I did not know that we made a Twitch.
Okay, yeah.
We are a unified front, but I didn't know.
I did it yesterday. So, okay. You wouldn't have the. I didn't tell you about it.
That's great.
I did share it on that little. There's an advert on Twitter. You can see where, 9:30 a.m. PCT.
It's free.
We're going to do a live cast this week. It'll be a bonus episode.
It's clear who the Mark Zuckerberg is in this relationship.
And we're gonna talk about it. We can't tell you anything now.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. It's a card.
Okay. So
that is in Eldritch Moon.
So no joke. This is funny. So Wizards sent us the card, and it's awesome. Uh-huh. It's really cool. And I read the email, like the specific email being like, this is how it works, because this is the congratulations on getting a spoiler card for the first time. We were so happy. And basically it was like, this is what you can tweet. This is what you absolutely can't tweet. And I misread it the first time. And the thing that it told us that we could not tweet, I was like, I should tweet something like that. So I like, started writing the tweet. And then I was like, this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Why would I be able to tweet this? I like went and reread the email. It was like, you absolutely cannot tweet this. I was like, ah. Thank goodness. That could have been so bad.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you didn't do that.
You would have looked, you'd be like, what?
There are Hasbro lawyer ninjas that'll attack us.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this Thursday morning, 9:30 Pacific Coast time, that's 12:30 for all you East Coasters. So we're trying to hit like your lunch.
Yeah.
And then for all those people that are on the West Coast, you're like coffee work break is when we're going to be doing it. We'll probably do some brews with the card, you know, talk about what decks that are already in the format that the card would be good in. That's all you're going to get from us now. Make sure to tune in.
Is there just on the subject of like just talking brews? Like I know, I've been thinking a lot more about brews. I have like this weird, crazy brew in my phone right now that I can't wait to talk to you about. I'll talk to you about after the cast. Maybe we'll talk about it on Thursday.
Okay.
It's really bizarre and weird.
We should, unless it's awful. Does it play the Brainstorm 3 drop with buyback?
Brainstorm 3 back?
Oh, not with buyback, with, it's like a creature from Ice Age or Ice.
Oh, Sage of Epitir?
Yeah.
It's actually from Time Spiral.
No, that's one blue mana. No.
Oh, Survivor of the Unseen?
Yes.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, good. Talk about it then.
No. Survivor of the Unseen.
Learned my lesson.
It does. There's a version that plays Sage of Epitir. There is a version of it. Okay. There's also a version that doesn't. It's that whole like counterbalance, Ethervile thing that I was talking about at one point.
Well, we can't talk about it anymore because
we'll save
too much information might be giving away what this card does.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with counterbalance. No,
totally different.
It does.
Well,
we don't know. All right, so let's move on because we're gonna mess up. All right, on to I do want to talk about. I want to maybe you say no and then we'll not do this, but. A couple of months ago, we started doing, once in a while, we'll talk about non-Magic stuff, and Game of Thrones ended this week.
This is where Alex gets to share his, I know everything about Game of Thrones.
Well, I don't anymore. I don't anymore. The only thing that, I guess, like, Sam has, like, one more chapter left that he hasn't gone into.
Okay, sure.
So first off, spoilers for Game of Thrones, if you haven't watched it or you don't watch it. If you don't watch it, this won't be that interesting, but you should stick around, because you should watch it if you haven't watched yet. We will be spoiling the finale for this last season.
So what we're gonna do right now is we're gonna do our official sign offs and our plugs, and then we're gonna end the cast with just talking about Game of Thrones. Yeah. So that way, if you do want to get out of here, so you can find me at Ben Bateman Media
on Twitter and everything
and Instagram.
I'm at Kess Wiley on pretty much everything.
And the MM Cast at the MM Cast is on Twitter and Instagram.
And Twitch and Facebook and YouTube.
And we have a sister podcast, The Command Zone, Jimmy and Josh. They do awesome Commander content.
Yep. Make sure to check out our Patreon. That's how stuff like this, we were able to do some cool things, and that maybe is why we were able to earn getting a spoiler this week. So, and all the Twitch streaming that we're going to try doing, and we're doing YouTube videos now. All of this is possible because of the Patreon.
And the intro to this episode that we'll be recording in just a second that retroactively is going to make it sound like we're introducing things for the first time that we're also talking about now for the second time, even though we haven't said it yet. We work with these guys from DMTW Clothing. It's a lifestyle brand. They help us do a bunch of cool stuff. They're producing a merch store for us currently. The merch designs we're getting look awesome. They're really cool. Yep. I'm very excited about them. Stay
tuned to our Instagram because that's where we'll start.
Yeah,
that's where we'll release pictures.
We've been talking about it, but like big news coming up, like a bunch of expansion stuff. These guys have been amazingly helpful, so I can't wait to show you what we're coming up with together. The Patreon is patreon.com/themmcast. There's a bunch of different levels of contribution that can help us continue to do the show. And that's that. So without further ado,
Game of Thrones.
So true story. If you've watched Game of Thrones and the finale and the ninth episode, you know like how sick of two episodes those were. So here I told this story to Alex already. But basically I was like four or five episodes behind. I just had gotten behind for whatever reason. I think I have HBO now. I watch it on my computer. My computer's in the shop around like the fourth or fifth episode, so I missed two because I couldn't watch it, and then like it was hard to catch up. So the other night I go turn on, I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch 7, 8, 9, and 10 because they're amazing. So I fall asleep watching, like I watch all of 7, I watch a little bit of 8, and I fall asleep like 5-6 minutes into it, right after the credits. Next morning, I turn it back on. I'm like, all right, this is great. I'm going to watch the 8th episode, and then later I'll watch 9 and 10. I realized at a certain point that I'm 30 minutes into the freaking finale of the whole show of the 6th season, and I didn't even watch 8 or 9, and I see all this crazy dramatic stuff. We can talk about what we saw, right, because we're in spoiler mode. Kessler?
Yeah.
So I see Cersei kill everyone. And I see Tommen jump out of a building, and then Jaime's like, the Blackfish cut down by foot soldiers. I was like, I didn't see that. Oh, come on! And then I realized I was in the finale, so I watched it.
I mean, we talked about this, but luckily, like, other than that first 25 minutes, nothing in the 9th and 8th episode really get ruined by that.
Right.
Maybe something in the 8th episode, but nothing big.
It wasn't so bad. It wasn't like one of those situations where somebody ruins the show for me. It was one of those situations where I was like, all right, so like I missed something here, but it's not like the worst thing.
Right.
Like, could be a lot worse. You know, it wasn't like I saw this on Facebook and now I know Tommen dies or something.
We also got L plus R equals J confirmed.
L plus R equals J. Oh, is that
I think
the...
I explained this on the podcast
yes,
already.
Yes, you did.
That Jon Snow is a secret Targaryen.
Yep.
So Jon Snow, we found out whose mom was. It's not Ned Stark. Is not his dad. It's his sister. Lyanna Stark is Jon Snow's mom, which means that Jon Snow is the son of Lyanna Stark and most likely Rhaegar Targaryen, who is Daenerys' older brother.
He's a Targaryen.
So this is what I think is going to happen. You want me to know my whole show, my theory? I think next season is going to be all about Daenerys taking over Westeros.
Okay.
And her and Cersei dealing with each other.
Yep.
It's going to be about, and then the last season is going to be about the White Walkers attacking. And like the last episode of, one of the last episodes of next season will have the wall getting destroyed, and then we'll move on to Dragons versus White Walkers.
Because it's confirmed there's basically 13 more episodes, right?
There's 13 to 15.
13 to 15. It's going to be like
seven episodes next season.
For sure.
For sure.
So season seven is seven episodes.
Yeah.
And then there'll be some number.
Season eight will be somewhere between six and eight episodes.
Right. So
my guess is eight.
Yep.
But likely seven.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Like, at this point in the show, you know, it's one of those things where I remember before this season, when they announced that there was only going to be possibly, like, two more seasons, I think there was a general consensus kind of like, oh, man, because everybody loves the show, right? Thing is, when you really think about it at this point in the story, it's hard to imagine going much longer than two more seasons.
Yeah,
because,
kind of just outline, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, at this point, it's like basically, like, Jon Snow and, you know, they're at Winterfell and, like, that's happened. And then, you know, Daenerys has basically everyone on her side. And then Cersei's at King's Landing. And that's pretty much it. It's like those are, like, the three places that, like, still exist. Everyone else is kind of just dead for the most part. So I don't think Jon wants to, like, sit on the Iron Throne. So I think he's going to...
Well, I don't think Jon ever wants to do anything. I think that... So, like, people have been hating on him and right because he in the second to last episode, the ninth episodes, he charges in the battle like an idiot.
Right.
The Leroy Jenkins memes are everywhere on the internet.
He got totally he's just like, baited.
Oh, yeah, completely baited. But I don't think Jon is a good commander. I don't think he's a good military commander. I don't think he has any experience doing that. I think he's a pretty decent leader that may be a little too Ned Stark ish, but I think he's a pretty decent leader.
He's handsome and a good swordsman.
Which you kind of see with him and the Red Woman, and like he's not going to kill her, but you're exiled. Like he's good at that kind of stuff. Because I think he's a person who doesn't want to be a leader, but just the world thrust upon leadership onto him.
I felt like him exiling the Red Woman was like, why didn't you just kill her, man? Like she's so powerful
She doesn't resent Jon Snow.
I wouldn't put her out in the world, man. She could come back to bite you. That's all I'm saying.
It's not like Littlefinger. Littlefinger is someone who would like stab you in the back. This girl honestly believes that Jon Snow is her Jesus.
Nah, I mean, she's believed.
She brought him back to life to accomplish that goal. So there's also like literal metaphors to Jesus in this situation.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think Daenerys and Jon Snow get hitched.
Really?
Yeah.
They're related.
Targaryens are like known for like, that's why some of them are crazies because the incest thing.
You think that like legitimately that's a real prediction?
Yeah. I think Jon Snow and Daenerys will be, unless one of them ends up being a bad guy or one of them ends up dying, I think.
And they,
being
and
married
they, and
the
they rule.
Well, because Jon Snow is technically the heir to the throne.
Right.
Because his dad was the heir, Daenerys' older brother is his dad. So he's the eldest son of the eldest son of the Mad King. Making him the actual inheritor of the throne.
So the heir, in one sense, the heir, if the Targaryens just forever will rule.
He has a better claim than Cersei Lannister does.
Definitely, 100%.
Though she like this is something also. I mean, we're running a little late on this, but she technically does have a right to the throne. Other than the whole like she's a woman and that might be something that is frowned upon. Though this show is pretty good at not caring about that, which is correct.
Well, and also, like, has been doing this incredible job of, like, it's all women.
Yeah.
It's all
the
women.
Are badasses.
And there's...
Leanne, what's-her-face Mormont, the little girl, up to Cersei Lannister, up to Daenerys, up to Brienne. Yeah, they're kicking ass.
Yeah. Lady Mormont's awesome. I mean, Sansa's great. Well, Sansa's only had one really good season. Otherwise, she was kind of just a victim forever. But she's good now.
She had two good, like...
Yeah. Arya's real sweet.
Arya's awesome.
So here's the real question, right? So this will be the final question because this is like where this is where we stand right now. Who is the best character in Game of Thrones to this point? I think the obvious answer is Tyrion. Tyrion is like
they took the Google search engine.
Yeah.
And like the algorithm it uses to like figure out how to recommend which sites to a person, and applied it to characters in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And so what it does is basically it takes which character interacts with the most characters, how often they interact with the most characters, and then it's weighted also by how important the characters that they interact with are.
Right.
And so it kind of is a scientific way to see who a main character of a story is.
Right.
And Tyrion is by like a wide margin.
Well, there's no question Tyrion's the fan favorite. Like, it hands down, not even close. Like, I mean, even people that love Jon Snow and love Arya, like it's Tyrion. Tyrion is the most entertaining because he's so unique, because he's become basically the fan favorite character on TV's biggest show, and he's a dwarf. That's right. Like, when has that ever happened in the history of the world? Like, he's like as famous. He is as famous due to Game of Thrones as like almost anybody that's ever been on television at this point.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I'll give you that.
Crazy, crazy. So I'm just trying to think who even really compares
Kevin
in terms
Spacey
of
Spacey maybe more famous.
Yeah, but yeah, it's true. They were both movie actors. I mean, Kevin Spacey's super famous. I'm just saying, like,
I'm thinking Tyrion might be the most famous person who's gained fame
from
purely
television. That's fair. Because
George Clooney is probably more famous than... Because, like, there's a bunch of people that don't watch Game of Thrones that know who George Clooney is.
Yeah,
and all
the
people
right.
that watch Game of Thrones know who George Clooney is.
That's a strong addendum. But so I think that's really interesting. Like, in my opinion, the only characters that you could really put on his level, like, that you're going to compare and really be like, they are this complex, their journey's been this long, would be like, Arya's had a great journey. She's had a really good story.
She had
story.
A weak season, I would say, other than that last moment.
Yeah. Yep. Like,
so, classically, and this is actually one of the complaints of the fourth book,
yeah.
is Jon Snow, Daenerys, Arya, and
Tyrion
are the four best characters of the story. And when the fourth book came out, none of them were in that book.
So here's the issue. My argument against the characters would be this. I think that though Daenerys is a really good character, Daenerys is very one note. She's
gotten way better. But yeah, I agree. Daenerys' storyline was, I hate Slaver's Bay.
She's just,
I'm
yeah.
so glad she's leaving there.
Yeah, like Daenerys is just like, she's great. And it's like, in some ways it's her story, but she's like, she is the equivalent of like a very dominant male character in a TV show that just gets to be that sort of like, I'm constant and consistent this whole time. She never really questions herself. She like, I mean, you can see the transition from the beginning when she is kind of a victim to now, but like that's basically her journey. If you say the same thing about Jon Snow, Jon Snow's journey has been good, but again,
he's a great character. He went from like spoiled, like down on himself, but like also spoiled at the same time bastard to like leader of the Night's Watch to now king of the North.
Jon Snow's a really good character. Like I'm just saying for me,
the story's about, so the book is called A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Like that's what the book series is called. Game of Thrones is named after the first book, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But Jon is like very obviously the ice half of that song, and Daenerys is very obviously the fire half of that song.
So I would just say though, for my money, just me personally,
Tyrion's the song.
It's Tyrion. It's Tyrion Arya. Tyrion and Arya are the
two
Arya
best
characters.
Arya is your favorite character after Tyrion.
Yeah, they like tie. Yeah. I still think just because I love him so much, I will never ever ever feel that Ned Stark wasn't the best character on the whole show. Because
really?
I just love Ned Stark.
He was fine, but I wasn't like...
I'm sure if I go back and watch the whole thing again, I'll find him to be super boring. But I love Sean Bean, and I just like... I just love, you know, I just love Boromir. What
as
can I say?
As far as like dead characters go, I'd say like I liked the Viper more than I liked...
The Viper?
Yeah, the guy with the spear.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was awesome.
That guy?
Yeah.
The guy who gets his head crushed?
Yeah.
That guy?
You didn't like that guy?
No, I hate the entire Snake Sisters,
well,
Viper.
I would say everything
Dorne.
After him was bad. I hate Dorne.
I don't like any of the Dorne storyline.
I like
story
him specifically.
Line. Yeah.
The Mount of the Viper fight is one of the best things in Game of Thrones.
It's pretty sweet. He just crushes his head.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mountain's pretty wild.
All right, so I think that's enough.
For all right. Way. Yep.
Yeah, all right. So thanks, guys, for listening. Remember, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Patreon, follow us on... Instagram, follow us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube. There's so many things now. And we'll talk to you guys on Thursday, 9:30 a.m. Be there or we'll just be so sad.
See you guys soon.
Yep.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.